it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
So, folks, the Florida Gators come in to Death Valley Saturday night, national TV, coming off an 18-16 home loss to the University of South Florida. Not a bad team, but one that they were expected to win. And LSU comes off in a Louisiana Tech game that some, on at least on one side of the ball, some folks say was kind of pretty ugly. And Chris Blair, the voice of the LSU Fighting Tigers, is here with us. Chris, welcome to the show.
No, always great to be with you, Newell. I think you assessed the preview of the game pretty well.
I don't know about you, Chris. That was a tough game to watch last week. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I was jumping up and screaming, and my wife had to leave the room.
After it was all said and done, first of all, let me say a win is a win, and So you'll take that to move to 2-0 for the first time in since 2019. So, the Tigers get their 1-0 mantra for the second straight week. Now they'll try to load up and do it again for week number three, and obviously get off to a 1-0 start in SEC play. But, you know, the good thing about it is, you know, initially we're in the booth calling the LSU game with the Florida game on as it's going down its final minutes. And we turn around and look and we go, wait a minute, South Florida's got a chance to win. In fact, me, Jacob Hester, my spotter, Crafton Blair, and Patrick Wright were all looking at the TV when the kick went through the uprights, and we thought, initial thought was, okay, now Florida's going to be angry, backs to the wall. The only way they can change the narrative around their head coach and their program is to come upset LSU. That's the first thing you think of. But then after the night wore on, the game was over, LSU got the win 23-7, and I heard Coach Kelly after the game, saw and listened to some of the players after the game. I thought, you know, even though LSU won, and Florida would trade that with them every day, it's almost as if both teams really feel like they didn't play their best, and both teams have something to prove this week. So I think that's a good thing for LSU, and that's kind of what Coach Kelly said last night.
Yeah, I got to imagine it was a tough week at the practice facility for LSU this week.
He was not happy. Yeah, when the players talked to the media this week, they all said it was it was a spirited week of practice, and that's what I like about this team, though, is they seem to be pretty mature in the fact that they knew that was coming, They almost embrace it because they knew they needed to get better. And Whit Weeks, I think, talked about it as well as the defense played. I mean, again, they wanted to throw a shutout, and I understand 23-7 doesn't look as good as 23-0. But they had some young guys in there. They scored a touchdown with a little over 4 minutes to go in the game. But they held Louisiana Tech to 154 total yards. For the second straight week of the season, they held their opponent to 3 of 13 on third down. And that dog will hunt in any game.
Absolutely.
And we saw the field position game go in favor of LSU as the game wore on. I think the average starting position for the Tigers in the first half maybe was the 16 or 17-yard line of their own. And then in the second half, their average starting position was the 42-yard line of their own. So when you look at the stats, almost everything was dominant except the final score.
Yeah, you know, for me, Chris, I said this to you, I think, last time we talked, I kind of focus on one or two players of certain positions that I'm looking at based on what I'm reading during the week and, you know, what kind of game they had the previous week. I thought there was a lot of players that really stepped up and played great football. There were some that were getting repeatedly beat at the line of scrimmage. And, you know, when you step up and you start playing these teams of a higher caliber, because Tech was physical. They were strong. And, you know, there were a lot of one-on-ones that they were – their side of the ball were winning repeatedly. on the line of scrimmage. And that was the thing that was a little difficult for me to watch. It was like, wow. I mean, we got a couple of players that are getting their ass whipped out there. Overall, the team was able to overcome it, pull it together, and win in the fashion that you just described. But you know as well as I, those individual battles when you play in those big games against, you know, teams that are going to be a lot stronger than Louisiana Tech, they matter.
Oh, 100%. And I think that, you know, kudos to Louisiana Tech. I mean, I've been, you know, I spent 10 years at Georgia Southern, and we played in these type of games where we're playing basically up a level, if you will. And, you know, a lot of times you go into that thinking, all right, let's just kind of slow the game down. Let's take a lot of time between our snaps. Let's let that clock move. And that's not what Louisiana Tech did. They were pretty aggressive offensively and certainly defensively. They didn't change their MO. They were like, hey, we might be outmanned from a talent standpoint, but we're still just going to, you know, try to blitz, you know, our line of scrimmage. We'll play man on the back end with this 3-3-5. And, you know, I give them a lot of credit. I think your concern is valid, especially when it comes to the offensive line. I think the defensive line own the line of scrimmage and their
action.
They did. But the offensive line, 100%. Now, you know, some of that is some continuity change right out of the gate when Braylon Moore goes down on the first play of scrimmage in the first quarter. And again, DJ Chester was the starting center last year. I know he didn't have the greatest game, at least initially, but he did grade out as the best lineman of the game against Louisiana Tech, believe it or not. But I think there was a continuity issue there. The good news is Braylon Moore is expected to be back after the high ankle sprain, but has had a great week of practice, and coach told us last night that he's a go. So hopefully that will settle things down, because I think Braylon brings so much experience. He lines the guys up. He makes the calls at the line along with the coaching staff. And really, when you look at the Clemson game, again, giving all the credit to Louisiana Tech for some of the disruption they caused, but let's look at the Clemson front seven versus the Louisiana Tech front seven. And I thought LSU's line did more than their share of punishment up front. So that's what I'm hoping for. And again, the coaches will tell you, the players will tell you, look, it didn't matter who the other team was. We got to go 1-0 this week. But I think there couldn't help. Just being human beings, I don't know if you could get that team as up for Louisiana Tech as you could for Clemson. There might have been just a few whispers in the head of, you know, this is going to be different. You know, I just think it's hard to be that hyped up when you're coming off a win like Clemson. I don't think there's going to be any issue with that when Florida lines up coming up tomorrow night. These two teams don't like each other.
You know, you've done this for a long time. The danger in the NCAA now, you know, with transfer portals, people moving around, you know, it's like a chess game. There's always a piece moving. You're going to find these teams that are just really physical and can play. I mean, Florida loses to South Florida. South Florida is a good team. There's a good program. They repeatedly, you know, win a lot of ball games, and they play the spoiler, you know, a lot, right?
Oh no, I know 100%. I mean, and they're kind of right now the darlings of college football, if you're paying attention to those that cover the sport, and for good reason. I mean, they handled Boise State in week one. I mean, just absolutely throttled the team that most people preseason felt like would challenge from the so-called G5 for a playoff spot. Well, South Florida said, hold my beer, because they throttled Boise State and then get the win over Florida in the swamp on a team for Florida that, you know, much like the talk here in Baton Rouge, this is Coach Napier's most talented team. He's returning five, I think, of his top six rushers offensively from a year ago. He's got DJ Lagway back, although Lagway certainly battled injury throughout spring ball and I think as recent as a week before the opening game. So I don't know how close to 100% and how much rust he's got to get off, but he's a great player. And then their offensive line, they went out and added some from the portal. I think they got like 109 career starts combined. So, again, that's a big win for South Florida. But make no mistake, you know, when you look at this roster and you look at what Florida's players individually have done wherever they have been, there's some guys whose names are going to be called in the first and second round of the draft.
it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah. I think it's going to be a close game.
It wouldn't surprise me in the least. It wouldn't surprise me in the least because Florida's defense under Coach Robinson, they got two coordinators, but Ron Roberts, I believe, is, you know, he's a former head coach, and he may be the top DC. But their style of defense is, no matter what, we are going to stop the run. You are going to have to beat us throwing the football. And they've also done a pretty good job, at least over their last five wins, which goes back to last season in the win over LSU and Gainesville, is they kept everything in the passing game in front of them. They didn't get beat deep a lot and still able to maintain a pretty suffocating rush defense. I mean, I think over the last six games, they've given up one rushing touchdown, and they're giving up an average of 2.9 yards per carry. So that, to me, is where the game really will come down to. Will LSU be able to run enough to then force Florida to have to move some guys into the box, which then might be able to open up, you know, some of the vertical passing game that we really haven't seen yet? And I asked Coach Kelly last night. I said, you know, there's some concern about where is the vertical passing with all these great receivers. And he quickly, as I thought he would, you think I'm going to show everything we got against Louisiana Tech? No disrespect to the Bulldogs, but we got a lot of football left. And when you go back and look at the game, you know, there were only one really big pass play connection of 23 yards. That was Garrett to Aaron Anderson. But there were a number of opportunities where they threw it downfield and Louisiana Tech was beat. And they just said, you know what, we're going to grab some jersey, bring this guy to the ground, and they can do it again. We're not going to let them score a touchdown. So, there, you know, when you take away some of the pass interference penalties, LSU did try to go deep down the field.
Yeah, in fact, I'm glad you make that observation because, you know, it's watching football for me is one of the few times that I'm not able to practice emotional intelligence. My emotions.
That's why we're called fans. It's short for fanatics. Logic doesn't apply.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for throwing that out because I am certainly less than during a football game for sure.
Well, you know, don't feel bad. I mean, Coach Kelly said the same thing on Monday. He said, you know, I was livid. I didn't think we played well. I thought we made bad decisions. We committed way too many penalties. And he said that's why he was hot after the game. And then on Monday in his press conference, he said, you know, we went and broke down the film. And while we certainly have a lot of room for improvement, and that's our job week to week, it wasn't as bad as I thought. So, again, coaches, players, fans, everybody, you know, gets that emotional tie. And you realize, well, wait a minute, we didn't throw the ball deep over Louisiana Tech. How are we going to be able to do that against Florida and Ole Miss and Alabama and the rest of the schedule? But again, you take it one week at a time. And like I say all the time, that's what's great about LSU football. It's not week to week. It's not game to game. It's play by play. So with every snap of the football, you're either elated or you're pulling your hair out. That's what makes LSU football so great.
So, Chris, I had the 66-year-old tuba player on the show the other day, and during the Louisiana Tech game, he got as much face time as about anybody. What a great story. What are you hearing nationally about that story of him playing in the band? He was a great interview, by the way. What a humble gentleman he truly is.
Yeah, it's interesting because I found out after the fact when the news broke prior to the season that he actually lives in our neighborhood. I've been asked since. I haven't witnessed him walking through the neighborhood practicing his tuba like apparently he did, you know, jokingly annoying the neighbors with a solo tuba going down the street as he practiced marching. But he was our honorary MVP of the game because you're right. Every time we looked up during a timeout or during a break in action, there he was having fun with the Golden Band from Tigerland. So great story. And as you said, it's been covered nationally and good for him.
Yeah. Kent Broussard. He was really a testament, and he really wanted to share it, you know, with the entire band, talking about how hard they work and everything else, and the pregame tribute and what it meant, and you know what how it was an inspiration to him. And you know, as I pointed out as a fan, when I go to the LSU game, if I miss the pregame tribute, it's almost like it's so much less of a game, right? When I miss that, because I still get chills down my spine when they play it. I'm sure you do too. You know, it's just, you know, one of those things.
Yeah, it locks you into step. That's what I tell people, is when we're up there in the booth and we're getting everything ready, just like everybody else, getting to their seats, getting their concessions, getting ready, and then you hear those notes that kind of lock you in that, all right, here we are. It's Saturday night in Death Valley, and you're right. I mean, the hair does stand up on the back of your neck. You're like, here we go. That's kind of the announcement of LSU football is on the way. So I think it's a great story. I mean, again, we're bombarded every single hour with, you know, darkness and bad news and all that's wrong in the world. It was good to see that bright light get a little bit of attention last week.
Let me just one last thing about Florida. One thing that scares me about DJ Lagway is he's due that kind of breakout game, right? I mean, and that kid can throw the ball. And it's going to be interesting when hopefully it's not happening Saturday night, but when it does, it could be ugly for an opponent.
Yeah, I mean, this is a Florida team that I think the biggest loss offensively to the draft or to the transfer portal was the receiving core. But so far, you know, Lagway has hit 16 different guys, 16 different receivers through two games. Now, again, I know the first game was against Long Island, and then they lost the game to South Florida, but that's still distributing the football. And you know, Coach Kelly said it last night on his show, LSU recruited DJ Lagway hard, and Florida won out on that battle. And so they're well aware of what he can do, and his cannon is he can put it, you know, 30 rows up into the seats from 100 yards away if he wants to. You know, but I like what LSU's been able to do on the back end. I think the biggest improvement defensively for this team has been the secondary, and that goes to, you know, the addition of A.J. Halsey and the addition of Mansoor Delane, and really I think D.J. Pickett, who's an absolute superstar, is a true freshman. So that again will be an interesting battle, because Lagway, not really a true dual threat quarterback, and certainly at least so far this year doesn't look like it because of maybe not quite 100% health-wise. But when he's got time and a guy breaks open, he can put the ball there no matter where he is on the field. And that's what's going to be the biggest concern, to try to get after him. And he's a big dude. I mean, not only – he's kind of a dual threat Newell in the sense that if you do get pressure, he's not necessarily going to beat you by blazing speed running the football, but he's just hard to get down. And just when you think you've got him sacked, he's still on his feet and he makes the throw.
237 pounds or something. He's a big boy. There's no doubt about that.
He said during media this week, he said, we know that when we get there, we're going to have to get him down. Like, it's the play's not over until he is down on the ground.
No doubt. Well, we look forward to another big night in Death Valley, and look forward to listening to you for sure. Chris Blair, voice of the LSU Fighting Tigers, thank you so much for joining us, and let's bring it home again.
Let's do it, and we'll do it again next Friday. Newell, have a great weekend.
Thank you, sir. You too. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. When we return, we'll visit with Mike Haas. Another big game. The Saints facing the San Francisco 49ers as they come in to the Caesars Superdome. Stay with us.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.